Well, good morning. This is Jerry Lang, and as I said, this is 8080. We're doing something a little different this morning, and we, of course, will be inviting your calls, as we do each and every morning. We have on the show this morning the Stampeders, and I guess it would suffice to say probably one of the hottest, if not the hottest group in Canada, and, of course, one of the top recording groups recognized now in the United States, south of the border. And I'd let the fellas introduce themselves individually to you. So, gentlemen, if you would do just that, please.
Okay, my name's Kimberly.
All right. Kimberly.
Rich Dodson.
Richie Dodson.
And Ronnie King.
And Ronnie King. The Stampeders. And we're going to come back. We'll interview them for about 10 minutes. And then we're going to get into the Canadian talent scene and to get a few impressions and thoughts from the Stampeders after we have a couple of commercial messages. Okay, we're back with the Stampeders, and let's ask them the inevitable question. How did you fellas first form the group? How did you get your start? How did things get underway for you? I understand it all started back in Calgary. Is that correct?
Yeah.
With a group of five?
No, a group of six.
Six?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And we, oh, wow. When you go back to the early, the first, Richard and I were the first guys to get together,
mm-hmm.
and it was on account of I put an ad in the newspaper, and, you know, when you're just starting, you do anything just to try and contact some other players, you know, some other musicians. Yeah, we formed a group and worked called the Rebounds about twice that year. And this was 1960. Well, it started in 1963, and then got a new manager, met Mel Shaw, who manages us now, and formed the Stampeders. And Ronnie joined. And his brother, and that brought us up to six. The Rebounds were four.
Mm-hmm.
And in 66, we left Calgary and came down east.
Toronto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And played around in the east, made some records.
Paid the dues.
Yeah.
Our first record in 67, and another one in 68, and so on and so forth until this year, which, you know, brought us some hits and some success.
What do you attribute to your success? How did it all happen?
Paying the dues.
You really think that's what it was?
Well, started in 1963. Yeah, I don't know. I guess just working and developing and timing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the sticking at it has a great deal to do with it.
Sticking together, yeah. Mm-hmm. It just takes a long time.
Too many groups, unfortunately, just whereas they may have a good thing going later on, they break up, you know, and that's not no way to get it.
Well, did you have any trouble now? I mean, being a Canadian group, you try to get your start, and you have to get your break here in Canada. Well, I don't suppose that you necessarily had to get the break in Canada, but at least you remained in Canada, and this is where it seems to have all started. Everything started here. Was there a specific reason for this break? What was it? How come all of a sudden the Stampeders became very popular in Canada, and boom, the next thing you know, they're big south of the border? And from what I understand, apparently you even have a Sweet City Woman is a hit in, is it Caracas, Venezuela?
Yeah.
And talking to your manager, I'm sure that's what he said.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest hits they've had in Venezuela for years. It's,
we also heard just heard some news that it was number five in Tokyo, Japan, so that's nice to hear, too. Yeah.
In Tokyo, Japan?
Yeah, right.
Isn't that right?
It's in the top five in South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia.
Yeah.
And that's such a weird feeling. Like, it's a weird feeling enough for us to have a big hit like that because, you know, after all these years. But then again, when you start hearing all these different countries, you know, wow, that's, you know.
But how did the break, I'm trying to isolate it, how did the break itself actually come about?
I think that comes from, like I say, having stuck together for that many years, and we've been for years putting, we've got a very, very good manager, Mal Shaw, who is very aware of the business and so on, and he's always constantly promotion and publicity and so on, putting ads in the different trade magazines and just...
Yeah. It's really a development thing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the stuff, say, in 68, 67, wasn't maybe good enough to hit. Hard to say. And there's also, I know what you mean, you're trying to isolate what makes a break.
Particularly for a Canadian group.
Nobody knows, really. To be honest with you, the CRTC ruling that happened last year was a break.
Mm-hmm.
Helped, you know, us and a lot of other people.
Sure.
And... I don't know if you can, you see, now, you know, I don't know if you can rack it all up to that or not. I doubt it, because, you know, then we had the international hit with Sweet City Woman. But for sure, it was a help. But I think the big break happened because we've been together that long and
yeah, it's kind of developed. It's kind of difficult for us to say that the CRTC was our break because we've spent all those years struggling and so on. Whereas
yeah, I think
two groups come along and they're into the Canadian content thing and they've been together a year or two and right. You kind of don't want to put yourself in that category, you know?
Yeah, so, like there's, when you get right down to it, there's probably five or six groups that are being played and that's it.
Yeah.
It's easy for the stations to get out of the... all of these groups that form overnight and stick out a record and think they're going to have something. I think we were getting to the point where we were ready, and that is just the finishing touch.
Yeah. You know, that's true. You build up and the group is ready then, and the material, and then you just got to get the public to hear it. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, that was possible.
Well, Rich, now you have written most of the material, from what I can determine from checking out album labels and things of this nature. So then what you're doing in reality is you're using your own material, which is something a lot of groups are not doing. Now, you go into a lot of clubs in Canada and in the U.S., and they are copying. They are doing material that has been presented originally by another group, somebody else.
That's pretty well all you can do, though,
when
you don't have a record out.
Yeah, that's all they want to hear. And that's a part of development, too. You have to go through that.
Have you always done your own material, then? You're a truly Canadian group, then.
Yeah.
When it gets right down.
We've started performing our own material about 2 years ago. We started performing our own material.
Mm-hmm. Been writing longer than that.
We've been writing for longer than that, yeah.
Yeah.
But we haven't been always performing our own material.
No, because we weren't able to. You know, like you go to and play, like I say, we're paying the dues and we played clubs, etc. You go and play in these places and people want to hear what's on the hit parade and stuff like that. So you just kind of keep your own material in the background kind of thing. Whereas now we can put it out in front, you know. Mm-hmm.
And they were rough because we had to do everything that almost 60% of the material we didn't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we had to survive through those years.
Yeah, well, then you had to go through what every other Canadian group has gone through. Mm-hmm. You've had to play the small clubs. Some of them even dives.
Well, all the groups that have...
Virtually every entertainer, not necessarily...
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. And almost all the groups that are making it have had to do clubs. Crowbar's an old club group.
And have been together quite a number of years, or in the business anyway.
Quite a lot of Lighthouse have been in and out of clubs and big bands. And
What was your first attempt at recording?
Oh, well.
Successfully, you are.
Successfully, the first thing
that was Morning Magic.
Morning Magic in 1967 came out in October of 67 and got, at that time, good play in Canada, because at that time in 1967, nobody in Canada was playing Canadian records.
And it might be interesting to go a bit farther back than that, because we had some good times in Calgary with this guy and his had this.
Well, our very first thing we ever recorded was in the TV station in Calgary.
Mm-hmm. Two track,
yeah,
thing, right?
And
no,
it was just,
I don't think it was.
Maybe it was just one take, you know, take, singing and playing and everything at the same time, and ran through it once, and we put that out. That was we kind of don't count that now as a record, but we put it out just in Calgary locally. And
It was Mel who produced it. Yeah, it was kind of a four-sided thing, right?
No, it was one before that. Hustle Shake.
I'm sorry, that's right.
We're going back now.
I thought one of the funniest times was just after that, I guess, was we recorded in this basement. This guy had a studio set up, and he didn't have too much equipment. He had one Telefunken microphone he'd bring out on a pillow type thing. He'd say, "Don't look at this too hard, you know, so that you don't break it."
It cost him $700 or something, you know, and he handled it it was a million.
I think somebody sang in a tenor and said, "You're wrecking my microphone."
Yeah, it was a kind of studio where you go back and listen to the tape, and there's no drums. And then the engineer would say, "You're right, I forgot to turn the drums."
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you've had your difficulties along the road.
You
certainly have. All right. This is the first recording of the Stampeders.
Look to the morning, magic, baby. Before you set me aside,
right. What was the name of that again?
Morning Magic.
Morning Magic. Yeah. And that's the first recording that you fellas actually made. I mean, that's true right. recording.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. We're going to get to the second recording now. Explain this one. This was on the MGM label. Was this distributed in the United States at all?
Yeah. Three of them.
Yeah. No, this was definitely released in the U.S. It was recorded in the United States in New York City. And we thought this was our big break because mm-hmm. A guy from MGM flew up to Toronto to see us, and we went down to New York City and recorded it, and really, really thought that finally we were going to make it on this.
Unfortunately, like it could have been, but unfortunately MGM were having their mix-ups and things, and weren't too interested. It's all a new artist and so on. They just threw it out.
Just before it was out, they fired the president of MGM.
Yeah.
So it just started to look like question mark.
Yeah, yeah. So did it sell in Canada or the U.S.
Yes.
to any degree at all?
It did sell in Canada. Sure, yeah. It was as big as Morning Magic and got about the same amount of play. And the other side of it got play, too, on Chum, mm-hmm. even, which was really hard to get.
It was quite something back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this was recorded when?
January of 68.
January of 68? All right. This is the second recording, then, by the Stampeders.
Come on over to Calgary Export.
All right. We're back with the Stampeders.
Ooh, that was a goodie.
It sure was. And I want to ask you fellows some questions regarding Canadian talent. Are you familiar with the Canadian Radio and Television Commission's ruling?
Yes.
Stations are supposed to play now a minimum of 30% Canadian talent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this has helped Canadian artists? Now, this has been in effect, I think, since January of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been in effect for a year now. Do you think it's helped Canadian artists? Has it helped you fellas in any way, shape, or form, or not?
Oh, yeah. You know, gotta say yes, because it has mm-hmm. been a very valuable ruling to many, many other people, too.
And it's kind of unfortunate they had to bring it in. That's just the only thing that, you know, we got to mm-hmm. say. Because there is a lot of good talent around, a lot of good mm-hmm. Canadian talent.
And there always was, but it was never recognized
yeah.
before
the
that.
The only way they could recognize it was to bring this ruling in. So.
But there was a problem, though, with recording facilities and things of this nature. Because as I can recall, going back into 1960, 61, recording facilities were not necessarily at their best in Canada, which made it kind of difficult for even a group that had something on the ball and did sound good.
that explains the groups going to the States to record and eventually getting into it down there and staying there.
Yeah.
But the recording facilities now are so much better.
Yeah, all right. Must
American groups are coming up to record in Toronto.
Yeah.
A lot of groups.
Does a Canadian group or an artist have to go to the U.S. to be successful? Do you have to?
Not anymore. Not so much.
No. You can be successful in Canada and not even have a hit or even be heard of in the U.S. now, which before was impossible. Unless you got on television, say the CBC or something, then you could become kind of a Canadian thing, you know, like Juliet or people like that.
A network thing.
Yeah. But now, even, you know, recording-wise, and that was, of course, out for rock groups or anything like that, but now you can do it. And even you can have hit records in the United States, not necessarily have to go there or anywhere. Like, you know, we're having a hit, like Ronnie said, in Japan, and we've never been there, in Australia, etc. But Canadians can make it at home now.
Yeah.
They can't make it as big, of course. If, you know, the more markets, the more places you have hits, the U.S., England, etc., the bigger you become. But you can make something here.
Yeah, but unfortunately not as much as you can make in the States.
No, not nearly as much. Like Canada is only a 10% market as compared to the U.S.
Yeah. All right. Our recording facilities in Canada now on a par with recording facilities that you'll find in the United States, because you have stated now that you recorded a record in New York, and of course you've recorded in Canada. So what kind of a comparison can be made now?
Well, I think equipment-wise, they've always been, you know.
Is it
they've always been there.
The technical aspect, the A&R men and things of this nature?
Exactly, because, you know, they had the same equipment for years as they had in the States. It's just that, because we'd walk into a recording studio in Canada here, and we'd say, well, no, we got to go down and see what it's like in the States. And we go down into a studio there, same equipment, but these guys, you know, well, we'd like sort of a funky sound. Funky sound, they push a button, you know, they have it right there. You know, exactly what you want. But here, it'd take an hour or so to get what you want. So, but now they're really getting into it. The engineer we work with is a guy by the name of Terry Brown, and he's English, and I guess he's done a lot of work in England.
Mm-hmm.
And boys, you know, he contributes a lot to our sound, I think.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to open the show to any listeners out there who would like to call in. If you have any questions regarding the Stampeders, Canadian talent, and possibilities, maybe you have a son or daughter, as the case may be, that is interested in getting into the industry, I'm sure that advice can be passed along by any one of these three gentlemen.
Or if you're a son or a daughter, call in.
Yes, and the number is 824-8080, or if you live in the Kitchener, Preston, Hespel, or Galt area, then the number is 653-6218, and we'd like to hear from you. We are going to have another commercial message or two, and then we'll return with more questions for the Stampeders. If you have any questions at all that you'd like to ask the Stampeders regarding Canadian talent, please feel free to do so. Those numbers, again, are 824-8080 and 653-6218. Fellas, are Canadians generally finding it difficult to become recognized internationally, as opposed to just, let's say, Canada and the United States? Are you getting a break on an international level? Now, you have mentioned Tokyo, that you're getting play there with Sweet City Woman. You have mentioned Australia, New Zealand, places of this nature. How has this come about? Has it come about again because of the United States, or is this something that can be accomplished through Canada alone?
No, they probably have CRTC rulings down there.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
No, it's come about, I must say, through the success in the States. The smaller countries will watch how the record does. And if it makes top 10, they'll consider releasing it if it suits their market. Mm-hmm. Like Sweet City Woman just seemed to have suited any age group.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's a few spots, like we got a letter from Lebanon. They felt it was a nice song, but it really didn't suit their market.
Yeah.
And like everybody's.
So, I mean, now we can't get a gig in Lebanon. I mean, what do you do?
I think in Lebanese, Sweet City Woman probably means something dirty.
Yeah, it may. It may very well. All right. I'm going to ask you kind of a pointed question.
We'll give you a pointed answer.
All right. The point has been made that the majority of groups or artists try to make it big in Canada so they can cop out by making the big bread, by making a move to the United States. If they make it big here, in other words, inevitably they're going to get their big break south of the border. And this is where the money is. So essentially they're going to be prostituting themselves. They're going to be prostituting the Canadian market.
And every word.
Yes. And
Is this prosecuting this station?
Yeah. Is this true? Does this in effect actually happen with the majority of groups? And how do you fellas feel about it yourselves?
Well, we've just been killing time for a while. We're just dying to get into the station. No. I think some groups perhaps do. I don't know whether the guests who have taken up residence there.
No, they are pure Canadian. Live here. They go down there to play, but they...
I know the five-man electrical band who are from Ottawa.
Yeah, they've been in the U.S.
And U.S. Mm-hmm. But we have no...
In the past, I mean, to start with, Canadians used to give their own group such a bad time that you'd want to get out of this country. Now, that's the truth. It's a bit hard to take. Now you can succeed here, and people will accept you. But a few years ago, you could be accepted in the U.S., and the Canadians wouldn't accept you. Mm-hmm. You know, so... Back in the days of the Four Lads, I think they were Canadians. I mean, when there was no music business, no recording facilities, no anything in Canada, you had to go to the States. I mean, that's the only way that was, but now it's not. Like, we just came back from the States, and...
I walked into the Troubadour Club in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And we were just wandering around town, checking out everything. We were going to play the whiskey, so we went over there the night before, and... just to see what it was like. Never
case
been
the joint.
The whiskey go-go on the strip.
Yeah. And so I walked into the Troubadour and I hear, "Sweet, sweet city woman." All these people singing sweets. What the heck is this? And I look to the left and there's this big long table. There's Clayton Thomas and Olive Crowbard and Jim McHale from the Guess Who.
Spencer Davis.
Spencer Davis and the big fat guy from Ace Trucking Company. They were all singing Sweet City Woman. Like I just...
It was almost like an ESP thing.
Yeah.
Because he walked in having written the song. He was the first one. He was ahead of us.
And they saw me. Yay!
Is that right?
Yeah, it was Canada, this whole tape.
You go down to L.A. and a lot of... It's like Canada Week in a sense.
Oh, yeah.
Like... Canada's very big in the U.S. now. They like it.
Particularly Southern California, though. There are a lot of Canadians, too, that reside down there.
Yeah.
But I don't... speaking of taking up residence down there, moving down there, the work is good down there. The money's very, very good. And when they do offer it, we're not going to refuse it.
But you'll continue to be based out of Canada.
Sure, that's right.
You'll maintain your Canadian status.
Yeah. We live in Toronto, which is a very good place to work out of.
Because you can be in L.A. in like 5 hours,
sure.
and New York in an hour. So it's all very close. It doesn't really matter where you live. Like there are a lot of artists living in Denver, that's becoming an in place. I hear Stephen Stills and a lot of people are moving to Denver because the air is clean or something. you can be anywhere, you know.
Yeah. And recording wise, we'll probably stick with. That's where our success.
We'll probably stay in Toronto.
Sure, right? That's where our success came from. Was. Toronto studios, so why change and try to get better and so on? Maybe we'll experiment, but...
Like, if it gets to the point where we're so busy we just can't get back to record, we're going to maybe have to record somewhere in the States or wherever we are.
We were in Nashville just a month or so ago when we were on tour in the States, and we checked out some of the studios there. Very, very nice, but still, it's, like I say, the same equipment and just different engineers.
So. Like with groups like the Guess Who, with the amount of hits they've had, their price is such that there's probably two or three spots they can play in Canada, or maybe five spots they can afford that price, and then for the rest of the time they'll have to stay in the States.
Unless they can play like in concert or something in Toronto or Montreal.
Well,
or
even in concert, it's...
The price that they have to get to play is only available in large cities.
Yeah.
So say there's maybe... 5 to 10 markets.
This is something that has a question that has cropped up, and this was something that somebody was mentioning to me last night. You'll find a lot of groups or individual artists, as the case may be, that were basically nobodies that got the airplay from the individual disc jockeys and things of this nature.
They
were willing to do all kinds of favors for the disc jockeys. They would come up on the show like you are doing this morning, and things of that nature. And as soon as they made it exceptionally big, and I'll make a case in point, Creedence, Clearwater Revival, all of a sudden it's almost impossible to even get near them.
I guess that
well, there's so many.
What happened when, you know, it all of a sudden when you say to them, look, I'd like you to come on the show, even if it's for 10 minutes, I know you've got a busy schedule. If you can't really do it, fine, but I'd like you, and you continually ask them, and then you find out, yeah, they had a couple of breaks and they could have done it, and yet they refused to.
Well, I think the...
Does it go to the head?
No, it doesn't go to your head, but I mean, there are certain shows that may hurt you. You know what I mean? Like, we've had, I shouldn't mention any names, but we've had an offer from kind of a prominent show in Canada. It goes... network.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about, television or radio?
Television, you know, well, it's kind of the same thing. And we've had to say, well, we're working on some bigger things. We're negotiating with the Flip Wilson Show people, and so being with William Morris people in the States.
Yes, as our good agency.
You know, we're negotiating with bigger shows and that thing, but it's hard to say because all television exposure is good. But then again, if you get on a show where you've got and now you've got Maggie so and so playing the accordion, and to get in with a show like that, it's just, you know, hurting yourself because people, that's supposed
to be it puts you on an amateur level when you're a pro, in a sense. Mm. But you, looking at it from the performer's point of view, when you're not making it, you really have oodles of time. You don't have to work very hard. You can sleep in late. You know, and rehearse, and when you get on the road, it's so tiring. Mm-hmm. It's mentally exhausting.
Yeah, go ahead.
As well, he's got his arm up. I was, you know, showing me.
I don't want to
show me how. Show me how well his band works. You know,
are you saluting us?
But you get so tired that, you know, if you have a couple hours just to sit down somewhere, that's cool because I don't know. There's something about traveling that just
exhausts
tires you out.
More the phone lights up.
Ah, we have a call here, so let's get to it. Good morning, 8080.
Yeah, right. Is this the Stan Peters?
Yes.
I got a question for them. These two are saying that they're professionals, right? I saw Lighthouse here at the University of Guelph, and, like, you know, if they went to their complete set, and they left out One Fine Morning, which is their super song, right?
Mm.
Okay, you know, like, if they all go off stage, and, like, you know, like, if they want to hear us, you know, so much clapping, and then they will come back on. I mean, like, that is kind of, you know, very childish. You know, don't you agree? Is it that they demand that? I mean, like, if they are good, if they put on a good performance, which they did, is that will be spontaneous?
Sure.
You know, and, like, I mean, a lot of pop festivals and a lot of pop concerts, and, like, it's sort of sickening in a way. You know, if they're asking for this.
Yeah.
Well, audiences enjoy responding, though, and enjoy building.
Well, right, I know, yeah, but it has to be spontaneous, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, there's like, very few groups
that isn't spontaneous.
Well, it
you're asking for it.
you mean
it's a great showman.
I mean, it's just like a trick for an encore.
Yeah. Right. But that's almost universal. Everybody does it.
Okay, it's universal, but it's still childish. Yeah. And it isn't real, eh?
Well, show business in general is not 100% real.
Yeah, but aren't you real?
Well, I got, you know, if you touch me or cut me, I bleed. But other than that,
I know, that's what I'm saying. You know, like if you get to a certain point, all right, like Mick Jagger has gone, like, to the disgusting. He's a phenomenal performer, singer, super showman. You know,
right?
You know, and like maybe as he demands, you know, like, but making people wait for 3 hours and like Sly, you know, they do it constantly. You know.
Yeah.
As they started out pure, right? And they lost it, I think.
Well, I think making people wait for 3 hours while you're purposely late for a concert is a real pain, even for the biggest
star. Like, if you get good bucks, you know, once you are successful, right, and you struggle for it, you know, I agree. You know, but, like, it is a business, show business, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to put out, you know, something. Like, if I pay you $5 to hear you play at 9, like, I kind of think that I'm entitled to it.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Like, Sly is known for that one thing you said, and that's just the way he is. Even if he'd sit backstage for 3 hours and just wait.
I saw Leonard Cohen in Amsterdam, and, like, he played, you know, like, he put his complete set, you know, and they just cheered him on, and, you know, like, he came out and he played, you know, for another hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay, you know, like, he came out because he wanted to, and, like, people cheered for him, not, you know.
Sure.
You know, not for this game.
But going back to the, I'd like to comment on the, going back to the encore thing, so much is involved in trying to build up your show, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, we've had things where we've just done our regular thing, and at the end of the show, done Sweet City Woman, and then people saying, encore, encore. Now, this is when we didn't have another hit record like we do now with Devil You, and we'd say, we'd be saying, walking back on stage through amidst all the cheering and so on, and saying, what should we do for the encore? How can we build above Sweet City Woman, if you know what I mean? So there, I think, might be another answer for saving your hit record for the encore, if you know what I mean.
Or building to an encore, because if you do your complete show and do everything you have, give people everything, and then leave the stage,
okay,
and then they want you back, and you got to try and do up something to do, it's difficult.
Yeah, right. Okay, so why don't you do your show? Okay, if you do, let's say $5 worth, you know, what you think is $5 worth, and there's an encore. Well, like the Who, like they played at Carnegie Hall, and like they asked for an encore, and they didn't get it.
Right.
You know, like they gave them what they thought, you know, was $5 worth. A lot of people didn't agree.
Sure.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's generally the thing. You give people what you have, and then the encore is kind of a little extra that you give.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, the groups will walk off stage and wait for people to cheer for 3, 4, 5 minutes and then come back on. But sometimes that's planned, and other times it's, you know.
Yeah, I would say 95% of the time it's planned.
Oh, I would, too.
Yes. Discover it at Crawford.
Okay, we're back on 8080, and let's ask you another question pertaining to Canadian groups or artists. What does a Canadian group or artist sacrifice to attain a measure of success? Do you feel that you had to sacrifice anything specifically in order to attain success?
Well, there was this guy came to me one night, and he had horns and a tail, and he took blood from my arm, and I signed a contract. And the next day, hit record, you know?
I had to sacrifice a steady job.
Steady job? Work.
Yeah. You blow your security, you know? It's completely insecure business, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
No guarantees.
No guarantees. Yeah. And the fatality rate is very high of bands.
Mm-hmm. You know, and entertainers who go down a drain, yeah. Mm-hmm.
1 in 10,000.
Yeah.
But
do we have a call there, Mac, by the way? All right, let's take this call in, gentlemen. Good morning, 8080.
Hello. I was wondering if someone has a song, like say I have a song and I want to know the address of someone I can contact to find out if it's any, you know, if it's going to be any good.
If it could be published or recorded.
Yeah, and where could it be, where could I write to?
You've just written this song, and nobody's heard it or anything. Do you have it on tape or anything like that?
No. But how would I go about that?
Well, like, if you sing or play piano or guitar or whatever, just get yourself a tape recorder and a small tape, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
put it on tape and send it to one of the record companies. There are many. Or publishers. Let me see. I don't know offhand an address, but
could find
if
out
you could
for
get
it.
If you could get a Toronto phone book, and you know, you can look under publishers or record companies, and they'll list maybe 50.
Yeah, I mean, if I want to write to you, I mean, have you got an address?
Yeah, but we're not in the. There's nothing we do with related to new songs by other people, because we record strictly our own material.
Most record companies want, from the artist, they usually want a finished tape. That means the whole thing with the instruments, with the vocal, everything all done, ready to release.
For her, that's going to be impossible, right? Like you.
So I'm just saying it's hard to do that.
But the best thing to do is get it down musically somehow. Find a friend who plays piano or guitar or something and put it on tape. And
even if you'd like to have somebody else sing it, if you want, I think she's just interested in it, whether getting somebody's opinion on whether the song is good enough to release. Now, on record, I think, like Kim said, you can maybe even write to our record company that distributes for us, Quality Records in Toronto, and even just a rough tape, say with a piano, sing your song, and put your name, etc., on a piece of paper.
Yeah,
and
a bit about yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for calling. All right, we have another call here, gentlemen. Let's get to it. Good morning, 8080.
Good morning.
Yes.
Oh, I have a question for the Stan Peters.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question for the Stan Peters.
Yeah, we're here.
Yes, we're here. Go ahead.
You're there.
Yes.
Yes, don't you think there's a marked change in the music back to the rock and roll of the 50s, such as Shannon Crowbar and Ronnie Hawkins?
Yeah, sure is. Boogie. Rock on. Yeah, there seems to be a lot of that happening, and I think we're... we're aware of it also, like with our latest release, Devil U, it's kind of like a rock and roll thing, and I like it, for that matter, but I think a lot of people are saying that it might go back to strictly that. I don't think that's the case, you know.
Well, Jason's been here a number of times. They play more of that late rock and roll music from the early 60s. Now, we're not exactly a big-name group, but they have been back here a number of times.
Uh-huh. That's a nice group.
Yeah, they're good.
We played with them a couple times.
Mm-hmm. They're more like the Stitch in Time type.
Yeah. Sure. Another good...
A big change going back to that.
Yeah. There's a lot of groups that have kind of... gotten into this act of doing an old rock and roll, like this group called Rain, good friends of ours from Kitchener. They're currently doing well on the charts also with a hit record, right?
Uh-huh.
And they have a whole rock 20-minute rock and roll act where they put the old leather jackets on and grease their hair back. And
Shauna Na.
Shauna Na is the biggest grease act in the world at this moment. And we've played some gigs with them, and they're really... If you've ever seen them, they do it like nobody else.
Oh, yeah.
They go right back.
I think they almost live it because, like, backstage, even just with us backstage, they were acting the whole bit out. And I was talking to the fatter guy, whatever his name is. And then the other guy walks up and says, what else do you want to know? And just playing the whole bit, you know. So what was I going to say about... we played a school last week in Toronto, a collegiate. And like you were saying about the rock and roll craze, and just, you know, like we do a sort of an act where it requires people to kind of be quiet while we talk to them. And it was just all night long, boogie, boogie, and rock and roll, and it was just...
So we just rock and roll.
Yeah, so it's fun.
Right.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
I have noticed something about your recordings. I'm thinking specifically about Sweet City Woman and maybe Carry Me. All right. Now, those two particular selections seem to be kind of country-oriented. Am I wrong in that assumption? It definitely has not so much a Western eye, but a country flavor. Yeah. Where are you getting this from? Where is this being picked up? It's kind of ironic. Generally, this kind of music comes out of the southern states, mm-hmm. the Nashvilles, and yet here you are, a totally Canadian group, all hailing from out west.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
I was going to say no
we're
pun
a bunch
intended.
Of hicks.
Now, I think it comes also from the fact that, Mal Shaw, our manager, who has come up with a lot of ideas before they ever existed, like country rock. He thought of country rock before it ever existed. He called
before
it something
before it came
different.
Into vogue. Like, there was a big country trend, which is kind of over now. It lasted for a year or so. And... like Richard, as the writer of those tunes, I think was into that a little bit ahead of his time too. Mm-hmm. And our first album, you know,
being influenced
there's a lot
by
of country
also.
Feel on
we'll
that.
We'll play anything.
Yeah,
that's it. It's just exactly. another thing that
I
noticed
stage.
The flip of Devil U, Giant,
Giant
in the
Street, in the
street
yeah.
right, is more of the what is commonly referred to today as the heavy material.
Yeah.
It,
yeah.
it seems to have more of that, maybe a psychedelic flavor, a little more of the. The electric guitar is predominant.
Well, I can answer that question.
Harder
there was a song written by Kim, who is the freak of the band.
Boogly, boogly, boogly.
You get tired of cranking your amp to 10 and just wailing out and banging your brains out, and then you go to something like that.
But
it's
I mean,
really
for
relaxing.
Those people who haven't seen us, that may be hard to take, too, because all they've heard is Sweet City Woman and Carry Me and that, and we do... our stage. Well, no, I guess they've heard Devil U now too. So that's more of what we're all about.
Unstage,
to be honest, yeah. Devil U is you know.
That's really your thing then.
And our new album is what we play on stage mostly.
Yeah. Like the banjo just sits there all night, you know, it just wavers.
Yeah. It cries, it cries. It says, play me.
Okay, we have another call, gentlemen. Good morning, 8080.
Yes, I'd like to ask the Stampeders a question.
Yes,
if there was much call for steel guitar players today. Rather than the Spanish. My boy's taken the steel guitar for 5 years, and he's truly interested in it, you know, the pedal type.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if there's much interest in this today, you know, as compared to the Spanish guitar.
Most groups that have their heads together are into anything, you know. There's an opening for anybody who can play anything well.
Yeah. But a steel guitar is a very popular instrument right now.
I was just wondering because they've been trying to switch him over, you know, from the steel guitar to the Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
And he's really not interested in it. And And then I've heard again that it's hard to get a good steel guitar player.
There's probably three or four good steel guitarists in the country, and that's it.
Because it's a difficult instrument. You got, you know, if you're good at it, it's kind of rare.
But then again, you could also think about the factor of songwriting. I don't know how to play the steel guitar, so I wonder what it would be like to sit down with a steel guitar.
It's the same.
To try to write a song.
Here's the thing. If your son likes playing steel guitar, then he should play it. If he likes playing Spanish, he should play that. And, you know, if he doesn't like to play, he shouldn't play. And whatever he likes to do, have him do.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really musically inclined, you know, and he wants to go someplace with it. And I just wondered if it was popular enough, you know, as compared to the Spanish type, to do anything with it.
Sure.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, well, if somebody's trying to convert him from steel guitar to Spanish, you just walk up to that somebody and say, let him do his thing, man.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you for calling. All right, we're running out of time, gentlemen. We're going to close off the show. Mac, could you cue up Devil U, which is their current release? And we'll close off the program with that. And I have one last question for you fellas with regard to Canadian talent. Is there anything that you would want to say to anybody that's out there listening, maybe that's interested in getting into the music business or is currently in it? And, of course, being Canadians, of course, we're broadcasting to a totally Canadian market. What kind of advice would you give them? And also, let me ask this, what kind of improvements do you think could be made in the Canadian industry? Or do you think things are pretty much on their way?
A couple of years ago, I'd have said, think about it seriously. But right now, you've got more of a chance than ever of really doing it.
And things are improving always steadily here, which is really nice. It's changing every day.
And some other advice might be that try to always think of something different. You know, like so many groups fall into the trend of like sheep, you know. Oh, yeah, we got to be heavy, and this and that. Got to sound like Grand Funk, got to sound like Led Zeppelin. Just try to get your own thing happening. That's it, you know. Just
because when the time comes, that's what people are going to buy. It's your thing, not what was happening 2 years ago or something.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gentlemen, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule for coming down this morning.
It was our pleasure.
My pleasure, too. And I wish you the very best in the future. I hope you have hundreds of more hit records.
Thank you very much.
And I hope that we've been able to at least help people with the Canadian talent subject this morning. And I thank you, the listener, for your participation, and thank you for listening to ADO. Have yourself a happy day. And we're going to close off the show this morning with the Stampeders' latest hit. This is Devil U.
CJOY, Guelph, Ontario. Time now for Citizen Service, brought to you with the compliments of Guelph Hydro. The Key, a Christian coffee shop, will present a Jesus Music Fest tomorrow evening in First Baptist Church.